How's your car looking? Showing its age? Faded paint? Dents? Dings? Don't worry. Maaco is here to help. They're the experts in affordable paint jobs and light collision repairs, helping you keep your car looking its best without breaking the bank. With Maaco's national reach and community focus, you're not just getting top-notch service. You're actually getting a partner you can trust. Visit your local Maaco today and see how they can refresh your ride. Go in, get the free estimate, and the expert technicians will handle the rest. Uh-oh, better get Maaco.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
I'm Holly.
And I'm Bridget.
And this
is Girls Next Level.
Welcome back to Girls Next Level, everybody. We have a very special episode for you today.
Yeah, I'm excited for this. I feel like people are really going to love this.
I think so, too. So our interview today is with one of Hef's sons, Marston Hefner. And just so you guys know where he is on the timeline, Hef got married for the first time in the 50s and had two children, Christy and David. But then he got married a second time in the late 80s to Kimberly Conrad, who was a Playmate of the Year. And they had two kids, Marston and Cooper. So Marston is the oldest son from that marriage. He was born in, I think, 1990, 91, somewhere around there. And he lived next door to the mansion when we were there. And we would see each other now and again, but we kind of tried to steer clear a little bit. Especially like on family. I mean, we definitely steered clear on family night because we really wanted to give everybody their space. And sometimes we would go out and do activities together, which we talk about in the interview, like going to Disneyland or going to look at Christmas lights. But of course, we never really got to know Marston that well. So it was really nice to get to talk to him and get to hear like his point of view on things. And I just think it's a really interesting interview. It was one of those interviews where I kept thinking about it long after
Me
it was
too.
Done.
I still think about it. I think about things that were said. And I also I think about something that's very intangible and that I hope you guys pick up in the interview is this feeling of family and like a real sense of like love between us. And it's very strange because even though we saw him a lot, he was there a lot, all of the kids were there a lot, we, like you said, we kept our distance and there wasn't a lot of bonding time, but it's almost like we all shared the same experience and we felt that love and we felt that like kind of familyness between us. I don't know, it's very hard to explain, and I hope that you guys pick up on it in the interview.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I felt that way too. Because even though we didn't interact a ton when we were there, we were both present at the same time in this world. And our experiences were very different, but it was still a unique time to be there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a unique time in our lives. Like obviously for him, it was his childhood and his teenage years. And for us, it was our 20s. But because of the way things were structured, like with the curfew and stuff, it almost felt like, I don't want to say a second childhood, because like I've said before, like we were expected to perform like women in the bedroom, you know, so there were parts of it that were very adult. But it was such a formative time for me. And also such an arrested development time for me that, I mean, I don't know. It was just like such a unique time and we were both there.
And it's so interesting to hear his perspective from, you know, from being his son to living next door to, I don't want to give things away, but, you know, like just things that he got to do as a kid and just like, it's such a unique perspective on things.
For sure. And I just really appreciate being able to talk to him because like when I wrote my book, obviously I had a lot of things to say about his dad. And one of the unfortunate consequences when you come out and say things like that is it has the potential to like hurt other people's feelings who aren't that person. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's always uncomfortable. And I just want to say I really appreciate his open-mindedness. And I was really impressed with his intelligence and just his willingness to talk about the nuances of things. I found that really impressive.
Mm-hmm. And it was nice to like really, I feel like I really got a chance to get to know him in this interview.
Me too.
Like somebody I knew for 7 years, but at this interview, I feel like we actually got a chance to be super honest and open about so many things. Like there, I feel like everybody was super honest and open and there were no hurt feelings. Like we just very much talked about things honestly.
Yeah, I think so too. And I have to warn you guys before we get into it, this interview like starts out of nowhere because when we jumped on the Zoom, we just started talking right away. And Bridget, you were like, do you guys mind if I start recording? Because it's a really great conversation.
Yeah, I wanted to say that because Marston was saying some really sweet things and Holly was saying some really sweet things back. And I was just like, wait, we're not even recording yet. You guys, this is so good. Like people need to hear this. And I hit record and all of a sudden everybody was silent and just like prepping and getting doing the things you have to do. And I was like, wait.
What happened? So this interview, just we're going to cut to it and it's going to start out of nowhere. And also, if you guys are watching the video on our YouTube or our Patreon, I have to warn you, this was the first Zoom I've ever hosted. So when I set up my own Zoom account as a host, I saw, oh, you can do like a filter. So I thought, oh, that's cool. I'm going to filter my face. So I put like what I thought was a subtle filter on, like maybe like 40% or something. No, I look like the fucking alien thing from Cocoon. Do you know what I'm talking about? That glowing thing?
Yes, but I didn't know when we were recording. I mean, I guess maybe because it's like this big.
Yeah, I didn't notice when we were recording either, but I watched it back and I'm like, oh no.
Does that filter work on everyone or is it just on you?
No, it's just on me because you set it up from your end.
Oh shit, I gotta find that filter.
So I feel like saying something corny like, please give a warm welcome to Marston Hefner. Like he's gonna walk out.
Can I say one more thing first? I feel like people are going to be legitimately shocked or surprised at some of the things he has to say because I was.
Oh, me too. Yeah, so, some of it was not what I expected.
I'm so excited for you guys to hear this interview.
All right, so here we go.
I got up to so many shenanigans that drove Bridget crazy, I think, while we were there. But from a kid's perspective, we were having an absolute blast. And yeah, I am a big fan. I read both of your books, Holly. And it felt really good. I mean, I think that we, first of all, like, it's just kind of annoying that I have to say this, but it's like, okay, this is your subjective opinion. Mm-hmm. And I don't agree with everything you said. Okay, now let's move on from that. Obviously, I'm not you. Like, when you wrote that book, it felt like we were there and we like were watching the documentaries that were coming out of them on the mansion and my dad. Mm-hmm. And it was all like the same story. It was all said in the same way, which was really bizarre because it's like if you get a different artist to say what the life of Michael Jordan was, it's going to be a different story because they're going to have a different interpretation. Mm-hmm. So I really liked that your book was like a breath of fresh air because it was a behind the scenes kind of like, this is my experience, even if it's not Marston's experience, it's Holly's experience, and why people got so upset about that was frankly really bizarre.
I think it's so incredible that you can see that people can have different experiences because many people can't see that. They can't see that somebody else could have been at the mansion at the same time and had a totally different experience.
Yeah, I'm really impressed by that too, because there's so many people who are like so much older than us even, and they just don't understand at all how people can see like different sides of a person or just have a different experience because of like the position they were in.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I was a certain age. I was like 19 years old and still trying to figure out, oh, that's my dog banging at the door. Still trying to figure out who I was and, you know, right place, right time. Somebody, you know, tries to seduce me. I'll say no. I'll say yes when maybe I don't want to. And so I understood just like how fragile you can be, even if you are over the age of consent. And I'm not saying, again, that my father like took advantage of you, because that's not my perspective. But I just like on an emotional level, I could like sympathize with your position.
Yeah. Thank you for being open-minded. That means a lot. Should we dive in?
I think so. And we want to start like back at the beginning, like go about what childhood was like for you.
Yeah, you have so much going on. You're the most talked about creator on OnlyFans right now. You're a new dad. You're an author. But we love to do stuff, and we'll get into all that, but we love to do stuff chronologically. So we want to start at the very beginning. And before we get into the, some of the stuff about your childhood that might not be so relatable, we want to know, like, who was Marston as a kid? What kind of things were you into? What were your hobbies? Like, what were your hopes and dreams?
I wanted to be... Now it's interesting because I'm trying to think of ways to think to say this in a way that I haven't already said it, because you know, my dad tended to say everything like the same way. Remember how he would do that?
Yeah. Yes.
In the interviews?
Yeah.
He was such a peculiar person that way.
I think back then that was just like the more old school way to do it, and the way to kind of like protect yourself from the press was, don't, like he always said, don't answer the question they ask you, answer the question you wish they would have asked you.
Wow. I think it's that, but then I also think it's something entirely else, because his whole life was the same.
Yeah.
Like, that's wild, man.
Mm-hmm.
Who else in our lives do we know who had like
same
Monday, same Tuesday, same food for dinner, same food. I don't think he had. It was just, he was so routine.
True. Yeah.
I think it brought him pleasure to just do the same thing over and over again. And I don't know why it is, but it makes me wonder different possibilities.
Yeah.
Yeah. Including his canned answers for everything.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I think that the fact that he controlled the narrative so much made it so like it wasn't a real perspective on what it was. I mean, because if you're giving the same answer and controlling what the documentary is going to be like, then it's only one perspective, which is why I respect what you guys are doing. But as a kid, I wanted to be a daredevil. I think I actually wanted to be the CEO of Playboy. You know, I did. I had dreams of being a rich CEO.
Yeah.
Did that include still being at the mansion?
That's a good question. I think so. Sure. I love the mansion.
Yeah.
What kind of things were you into? Like books and TV shows and toys and stuff like that?
I loved Pokemon. I loved Beanie Babies. I loved... because you guys are like a little bit older than me, right? So my nostalgia is not your nostalgia.
Yeah.
But I like all nostalgia. Pokemon was huge. Beanie Babies were huge. And Toonami and anime, you know, watching Nick at Night. I think you guys like, did you guys like Nick at Night?
I'm a little too old for Nick at Night. Like my little brother was into that. He was about your age.
Okay. I feel like they had Nick at Night in like the early 90s too, but maybe it just wasn't popular.
Yeah.
So I'd like watch Fresh Prince of Bel-Air and...
when Fresh Prince of Bel-Air filmed. You were like a baby, right?
I was a baby for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that picture of your dad and Will Smith, like behind the game house. It was like on the hallway wall.
So cool. Like those photos, man. Like,
yeah, that was
the photos that would just line up, and it's just like my dad's memories / trophies, and what a life.
Yeah.
Yeah. For those that are listening and might not know, there was a hallway that started at my bedroom door and went all the way back to the offices. And it was just lined with like, what was it? What would you say? 5x7 or something photos of Hef with like every celebrity or every interesting moment in his life. The hallway was just lined with hundreds of pictures.
Yeah. Special moments. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was in there. Magic Johnson, Paris Hilton, Charlie Sheen. Throughout the ages, different memories.
This episode of Girls Next Level is brought to you by Wild Grain. Wild Grain is the first ever bake from frozen subscription box for sourdough breads, fresh pastas, and artisanal pastries.
Every item bakes from frozen in 25 minutes or less, no thawing required.
The team at Wild Grain just sent me a new box. So much delicious stuff is inside it. I'm going to tell you about it, but I want to know what you got in yours because I know you got one too.
Oh yeah, I got like sourdough bread and all kinds of pastas. It looks amazing.
They are so good. I've already eaten mine already because I took the pastas, made it for my kids. Everybody loved it. They also sent me apple pie bites, which are so good.
Yum.
But my favorite things were the loaves of sourdough bread. I got a couple different ones. Once had like sesame seeds on it, but it's like the best bread I've ever eaten. And it's great because you put it in your oven and you don't have to do any of the work actually making the dough.
Right.
But you still get the satisfaction of like putting it in the oven and your whole house smells like bread.
Yum.
Which is the most amazing scent ever. And it's just, you have it hot out of the oven. You can put butter right on it. It's so good.
I can't wait to try mine. I was thinking too, it's like nice having it in the freezer with all these holidays coming up and everything. Just like pull out a loaf of bread or like the pasta for a quick dinner. Like I'm looking forward to it.
100%.
And you can now fully customize your wild grain box so you can get any combination of breads, pastas, and pastries you like. If you want a box of all bread, all pasta, or all pastries, you can have it.
Plus, for a limited time, you can get $30 off the first box, plus free croissants in every box when you go to wildgrain.com/nextlevel to start your subscription.
That's right. You heard us. Free croissants in every box and $30 off your first box when you go to wildgrain.com/nextlevel.
That's wildgrain.com/nextlevel. Or you can use promo code nextlevel at checkout.
Shel Silverstein, who was one of my favorite people I got to meet there. As a kid, we were talking about, we'd call him Uncle Shel. So Uncle Shel would come every morning. He'd wake up, he'd draw his cartoons, work on his art. I'd get to hang out with him and pretend to draw with him. And
that's so cool to get to see that process.
Right.
This stuff is so iconic. How old were you when you discovered who your dad was or realized that he had like a really unique job?
Probably immediately because...
Oh, wow.
Maybe kindergarten or first grade when I don't really know, to be honest. I don't know the answer to that question. I think maybe kindergarten, I understood my dad was really cool because like we had a big house and people wanted to come to the house. It's bizarre. Maybe it's bizarre that I don't know the answer to that question because we were around other really successful fathers who like
that makes
really,
sense.
We would go to mansions and then they'd come to our mansion. It was like that kind of community.
Yeah, that's interesting. Do you remember, this is probably one that goes so far way back you don't remember either, but do you remember the first time you saw the magazine or realized that that was something special?
Yeah. The magazine was all over the place.
Yeah.
Forever, right?
Uh-huh.
That didn't change because I was there, which I'm grateful for. And so, like when I was a kid, and so we would hold on to the magazines. I'd cut out Pamela Anderson photos and I just loved looking at it. It turned me on. I don't know. It's great.
And they were all over the mansion, just so you guys know, for the listeners, like they were out by the grotto, they were in the bathhouse, they were in the game house, they were in every room of the mansion. Playboy magazines were laying around like the last 3 months.
Yeah. One of the fun things that I had back in the day was trying to find the bunny, the secret bunny.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that was probably my favorite part of it.
Yeah, that's fun.
I love doing that too every month.
So growing up in the mansion, of course, there's this huge staff. There's like chefs, butlers, video department. What was it like growing up with staff? Like, were they like family or were there ever any moments where you're like, why are you here? Or, oh my God, can they get rid of this person? They're an asshole.
Oh my God. I'm so glad you asked me that. That's such like a only you guys would ask me that question. Fuck, man. The staff were really mean to me. At a certain
time. Whoa! I thought you were the opposite.
Me too.
No, they were really fucked up to me. Really. Like it was like because it was kind of like I was the son who was like living off of my father's success, is my guess is of what it was.
Like jealousy. But,
yeah, like jealousy or just like they thought I was entitled. They felt like I didn't really belong. But like very many times when I was like a college student and I was living at my dad's house, I would say, you know, may I have a filet mignon, which already sounds posh as heck out of a mouth. But I said, you know, could I have a filet mignon, please? And thank you so much. Or thank you. I always, because I was taught as a kid to always say thank you, please. And just hang up. No response. Or they'd come into my room with like kind of angry grimace on and give me my food. It never felt at that age, I did not feel welcome. And my girlfriend at the time said that when I left, they like took shots of whiskey in celebration. And like, yeah, it's really, and I'm not like a difficult person is the thing. Like you guys know that never felt good. And it just felt like they thought I was something that I wasn't. And that wasn't for all of the staff, by the way. Then funny enough, when I was a kid, when I was like 8 years old or even younger. Throughout my childhood, the staff were always really nice to me. Mm-hmm. It was really when I became an adult that they didn't like that. But So it was two different worlds, you know, two different experiences.
When you were younger, did you think that they felt like an extended family?
I still feel that way about them. Like, by the way, like not all of them, but yeah. Ryan Olay and some of the staff, you know, I'm very close with them. Hey, honey.
Hi.
My wife, Hi. Anna. Thank you for the Starbucks, honey.
Wait, where's mine?
Yeah, it's still like an extended family for me. You know, we went to Creation Organic, and that's why it's hard for me to, like, the tabloids and the media pick one part of what I'm going to say on this interview.
I hate that. It's the worst.
And it's like, okay, I am family with them and I am close with them. Some of them were freaking awful to me. And even the ones that I love now were awful to me then. That's family too.
Yeah.
That's why I'm kind of glad to, like, talk to you guys, because we can have these nuanced discussions about, like, what really our experience was. And I've been looking forward to this for a long time.
Oh, good. Yes, for sure.
Can I ask you real quick, what was your guys' experience with the staff?
I felt like I got along with the staff pretty well, although there was this one guy who was a bartender, and he wrote that he left, and then he wrote this whole, like, low-key book that he never published or anything, but he sent it to Joyce, who gave it to your dad, and I read it too, and this guy, like, hated me and said I was, like, the biggest stuck-up bitch, and I obviously have an agenda, but I was like, holy shit. So wow. They were thinking, but I always felt like the staff was fine. Bridget, it was that bartender who used to bring the steel drum on Saturday.
Oh.
Yeah. And you were friends with him. And I remember saying to Hef, I was like, what the hell is this? And he goes, but if he would have got to know you, he would have liked you. Like, he really liked Bridget, because he's writing, like, he's friends with you and stuff. But he, like, hated me, but I had no clue. So, like, I felt like everything was okay with staff, but I don't know what they're saying behind my back. It could have been anything.
I had an idea of what they were saying behind your back.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe I don't want to know, though.
Well, all I'll say is that, again, I think that they were seeing, like, you were always really nice.
Oh, thank you.
You were fucking nice. That's all that matters when you were over there. That's who you are and who you show yourself to be in front of people. For me, you were always nice to me. So, and to other people, I'm sure. I know who.
Thanks.
For me, I had a great relationship with the staff, or so I thought. Now I'm not so sure, but and I'm still friends. I'm still friends with a lot of them today, and I thought of them as family, and I was really happy to have them at the mansion, because, I mean, you know, Holly's the main relationship with Hef, and I'm just sort of in my room on my own. I'm very social, and I like to have other people around. So it was nice to be able to go downstairs, even though we were technically not supposed to. It was nice to go downstairs and to talk to people, that whether it was staff or other guests or girls that were staying at the mansion. I just really liked that there was other people around. So I don't know what I would have done without them. So I feel very loving towards the staff. I felt that then. I feel it now, but you maybe know a different perspective.
No, I think that's fair. But what do we mean you weren't allowed to go downstairs?
Well, the girlfriends had a no fraternization rule. So, like, we weren't supposed to be talking to the staff. I did it, but we weren't supposed to. So if Hef were to come down, we all have to act like I was just grabbing a soda or something and going back upstairs.
That's abuse. That's emotional abuse. Yeah. You have a boyfriend who's telling you can't talk to people because you're going to cheat on him. Like, that's not good in
right.
any situation. And we kind of act like he's Hugh Hefner. So, but if that was any other situation, that would be abuse, I think.
Yeah. And I definitely looked at it as normal and understandable at the time, because I had heard that other girls had cheated on him with staff, with butlers. So I totally understood where it was coming from. But at the same time, I knew that I wasn't doing that. I just wanted companionship. So, but we were very careful about it, but I did definitely hang out down there and make friendships. And
yeah, I know it did. It's like, it was like a rule that nobody really followed, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you got to, like, make friends with all the staff, and, you know, maybe it's just one of those rules that, you know, it sounds strange, but then you still get to bond and
So most of you have probably heard me sing the praises of Pros and their truly custom made to order hair care. I just posted my latest delivery on Instagram the other day. I love the packaging, everything about it. Switching to a custom routine from Pros was one of the best things I've done for my hair. And the results I'm seeing just keep getting better.
I have noticed so much growth in my hair. It's incredible. And I've noticed improvements in the texture. It's one of a kind, made to order formulas. It's shinier, smoother, softer, stronger.
I love the packaging because it has my name on it, first of all, yeah, on every bottle I order. And it just has this like really cute apothecary look that I love. And everything smells so good. Even the conditioner, it's tinted purple. Mine is for like color maintenance. And it's just such a pretty color. And I just love it.
Pros knows there is more to you than just your hair type. Pros has given over 1 million consultations with their in-depth hair quiz, which is how I got started. It's an easy quiz. You go on their site. It's actually kind of fun. I mean, maybe I just like taking quizzes, but it's actually kind of fun. But like, you answer all these questions about like the texture of your hair and what you're having problems with and what you want to see and your eating habits and exercise and all that kind of stuff.
And where you live, like, because we got to factor in that LA smog damage.
Yes, totally.
By analyzing over 85 personal factors, Pros handpicks clean, sustainable sourced ingredients that get you closer to your hair goals with every wash.
My favorite feature is Pros' review and refine tool, which lets me tweak my formulas for any reason in case I change up my address, my hair color, or even my diet.
I might do a second quiz and get like a second set for Vegas in case that makes a difference.
Oh, yeah, you should try that. If you're not 100% positive Pros is the best hair care you've had, they will take the products back, no questions asked.
Custom made-to-order hair care from Pros has your name all over it. Take your free in-depth hair consultation and get 15% off your first order today.
Go to pros.com/next level. That's PROSE.com/next level for your free in-depth hair consultation and 15% off.
So growing up, did you get to do a lot of the quote-unquote normal family things like family vacations, or did you like have chores and allowance or those kind of things?
I didn't have chores. I had an allowance.
I kind of get that because sometimes I want to like, I try and get my kids to like pick up after themselves or do things, but sometimes it's just fucking easier to do it myself because I don't do a good job. So I kind of get that.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Family vacations. Like, did your dad ever travel back then or did you just go with your mom?
I just went with my mom, but so I didn't really appreciate how fortunate I am and what a wonderful life my father gave me until I started really caring about like having a beautiful home mm-hmm. or going on a beautiful vacation. Before then, I was just really like writing, and that's all I care about. And I could be poor. But now I live in a beautiful home and I enjoy going. So my father has funded like my whole lifestyle. And the beautiful vacations to Maui when I was younger. And I'm really grateful that my life and an incredible life that I have is possible because he like decided to give me an inheritance. You know, he could have given it all to whoever.
Yeah, for sure.
He gave some to me. So, yeah, I've gone on a lot of really great vacations with my family. But you know him. He was like a hermit, like mm-hmm. or how to say it in a nicer way. He didn't like to leave his home.
Yeah.
He hated it. Like I asked him to go to dinner or you guys will know how ridiculous this would be to say to him, but like, you know, could you go out to dinner with me or could you go to a movie with me? And he was like, what are you
talking? Yeah.
You know, thought of
a special way to do it.
He thought of it as work. Like when he would take you ladies to the ball game or whatever, that wasn't like exciting for him, I don't think.
No, I think it was more like, oh, we might get like a cool PR photo and then let's hurry up and get back home.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same with the dinners at the fancy restaurants and stuff. Like we wanted to do that once a week, go to a nice restaurant. And for him, it was like, maybe we'll get a picture that we're out at this restaurant because he brought his lamb chops to the restaurants. I don't care if we were having sushi. He brought his lamb chops.
That's such a peculiar thing because he liked a certain food and that was the only food that he liked. And it had to be not lamb chops. It had to be the Mansion's lamb chops recipe. Like what is that? Is that OC? Is that like obsessive compulsive? Is it autism? Is it, it's something that is different than most people operate, where it's the same, he needed it and get angry if it wasn't there. Like if what he expected wasn't there, if the lamb chops weren't there, he would get upset. Just that part of my father really makes me wonder. It's like, what is it that he needed that routine?
Yeah.
Have you guys thought about that?
A little bit. Like I thought about like maybe being on the spectrum or having OCD or even just, you know, the way at a young age his life exploded. Maybe there's just certain things you hang on to that like, wow, I have all this going on around me. Maybe I just need these touchstone things. I don't know. It could be any of it or a combo.
I feel like it was a way for him to stay in control too.
Yeah.
And that was very important to him.
But I don't know, why did he need control that bad, right? Because even with the ladies, you know, the curfews, he needed that to feel, and I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't know why either, because when you look at him and what he had accomplished, he's the last person you would ever think would have like any kind of insecurity or feel the need to like control something down to a level. So it's odd to me. I don't know.
But I also think that the lifestyle that he was living and all the people in his life and all the parties and all the events could lead to a very out of control lifestyle if you didn't take control and have a routine. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not trying to defend him. I'm just trying to talk about it.
It could be the root of it. You never know.
Yeah, there were a lot of people who didn't have his best interests at heart that were surrounding the mansion that he was around. So maybe just doing these little things made him feel like, okay, I'm safe. My life is good. I have what I need.
Yeah, because you never really know, you know, what people are up to. It's like,
yeah,
you can't control.
And I definitely agree that not everybody was up there had his best interest at heart.
No.
When you were, do you have like a favorite childhood memory from the mansion?
Probably playing chess with my dad. It was a moment in our lives where he took like a really special focus on me. And he was just like really loving, really supportive. And we would play he would play chess with me every Tuesday for family night. And at some point I beat him. I think I beat him legitimately. And he was so happy. And like the joy that he had, instead of being like, shouldn't have, you know, he was just really proud of me. And I think that moment in time was my favorite at the mansion.
That's awesome.
He loved to play games. Loved it. We had game night where we did Monopoly or Uno, and he took it very serious. Like every rule had to be followed to the T. Like there was no messing around in Clue.
Yeah. Oh my God, I loved Clue.
Me too.
Bro, what is his deal with games? And he didn't care to like win. Like he wasn't like a competitive person, but he loved just playing them.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think? Like, I feel like he just loved it.
And he knew how to win everything. And he wasn't shy about sharing his tips either. Like, I feel like I can't be fucked with on games now because I learned all the tips from him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's something that I think is really positive that I took away, where it's like, have a game night with your kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, like. That's just, it was a lot of bonding. It was, those moments are just simple and fun and stuff like that. I think I took away from him were just the simple pleasures in life, the Hollywood, you know, 1920s black and white films and just a simpler time that he loved. I like, you know?
Yeah.
That simple joy that he brought to like our lives.
There was a lot of his personality, and I think this is what attracted me to him, that was very playful and kid-like. We talked about this a little bit already, but other kids at school, when I know you said that some of them wanted to come to your house as early as kindergarten, but when did you really notice that everybody knew who your dad was and where you lived?
Did it take the other kids at school a minute to figure it out? Like, was it something that they knew right away, or was it more of like a teenage thing?
More of a teenage thing, I think.
Yeah.
I think maybe elementary school kids don't really care about who Hugh Hefner is. And then once you hit puberty, then you care about going to the Playboy Mansion and you care about that stuff more.
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't feel like a big deal in elementary school. I'd say when I went off to camp and people were coming up to me saying, I heard Hugh Hefner's son is here. Do you know where he is? And I'd go, no, I don't know where he is. You know, like hearing the rumors of Hugh Hefner's son is going to camp at this camp, that's kind of when. So maybe when I was 11 years old.
I remember Christy had a really funny story. Did she ever tell you that about how when she was at camp and somebody said to her, oh, I heard Hugh Hefner's daughter's going here. And she said, well, who do you think it is? And he said, I think it's Elizabeth. She has big boobs. I don't know what the name of the girl was, but it was like,
I got one that said, I heard Hugh Hefner's kid goes here. And I go, oh yeah. Like, well, tell us more. Yeah. He's really stuck up. He's just an asshole. You know, he talks shit. You know, people just say he just thinks he's better than everybody else. And I go, wow, like that guy sounds like a real asshole. And it's just like these rumors that get spread without anybody knowing who you are. Or you guys know what that's like. And so then we say, you know, oh, you know, like that's me. He goes, oh, I'm so sorry. I had no idea. I'm going to tell everybody that you're great. It's like, you're not getting the point. Don't tell anybody anything about me.
That's so funny. Did you have security go with you everywhere when you were a kid?
Yeah. You knew that. That was a leading question.
No, I do. But what I wanted to get to was there ever an age you got to, like, say you're 13 and you're like, fuck, I want to go do my own thing. Like, did you ever have an opt out?
Of course.
How old were you and how did that convo go down?
Did you ever live at the mansion? Well, now I want to flip it because I want some control over this conversation.
Do it.
Did you ever be like, I want to get the fuck out of here and it's 9 p.m. and I have a curfew?
Yeah, there were lots of times I wanted to go do like girl things and I was afraid to ask half the time. So that didn't go very far. But I just wonder what that's like for a kid and you have security and you're like, I want to go off with my friends. Like, did you ever feel like you could ask your parents for that? Yeah, or
not my dad. My dad wasn't really doing the security thing. It was more my mom. Mm-hmm. And she was trying to keep me safe, I think, in her own way. I think that was her rationale. It sucked, but, you know, I understand.
The same way in her place, though, 100%. Yeah.
I was home late from that curfew one time and I never did it again. I got in big trouble.
Bridget, did you know that we're eating and drinking roughly a credit card's worth of plastic a week?
Ew, no.
I hope it's going to my boobs at least, but probably not. The products that we're using every day are ultimately contaminating our water supply, generating hundreds of microplastics that we end up ingesting. So Blue Land has set out to do something about it. Eliminate the need for single-use plastic in the products we reach for the most.
Blue Land is on a mission to eliminate single-use plastic by reinventing cleaning essentials to be better for you and the planet.
Their idea is simple. They offer endlessly refillable cleaning products with a beautiful, cohesive design that looks great on your counter.
Just fill your bottles with water, drop in the tablets, and wait for them to dissolve. You will never, ever have to grab bulky cleaning supplies on your grocery run. Refills start at just $2.25, and you can even set up a subscription to buy in bulk for additional savings.
From cleaning sprays to hand soap, toilet bowl cleaner, and laundry tablets, all Blue Land products are made with clean ingredients you can feel good about. I love Blue Land because I have a lot of plastic guilt. Like, I'm always drinking bottled waters or getting a coffee on the go. So I'm always looking for ways I can stop that and cut down on all my plastic consumption. And just the convenience of being able to have it as a subscription and get it delivered automatically. Like, I love that.
Blue Land has a special offer for listeners. Right now, get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/next level.
You won't want to miss this. blueland.com/next level for 15% off.
That's blueland.com/next level to get 15% off.
Did you ever wonder, okay, so like Holly, there was a moment where you were thinking, and this will go for Bridget, but in a different, just changed a little bit. That would be your whole life, right? You were interested in, while you were there, you expressed interest in marrying him. Were you ever thinking like, I could do this for the rest of my life and be happy? Or
because extent I was, but I think in the back of my mind, I did think I would like earn a little bit of trust. And I think that was one of the most frustrating things to me is I was there and I was faithful and I was following the rules all to a T for years, but I kind of felt like I was still treated like that random playmate he dated a year before me who fucked a butler. You know what I mean? So I definitely felt like I could make this my whole life, but I think I did think, oh, as time goes by though, I'll earn trust. And if I wanted to do like a girls' night thing, like that would be okay. But it just never really happened.
One thing that I'd like you to talk about that stuck with me so much. Like I read your book, your first book, and this has stuck with me the whole time. You said, thought that if you were his girlfriend, and if you got closer to him, if you became, you know, his wife or his number one or his favorite, that he would show something of himself that was different than he showed other people. And you said he never revealed that hidden person, the one that we knew was there, but he kind of showed everybody the same person, at least for me. And so I had always wondered as his son, like, who is he when he's laying on the bed, just relaxing? Like, who is he like behind closed doors? Cause it felt to me like I never really got to know him on a really, really level. And you said like, that just didn't exist.
Yeah. I mean, I think I did see kind of like a relaxed, playful side sometimes, but it didn't last very long. And I think what I was getting at when I wanted to see something different was a trust. Like I wanted to see that person when he finally was like, okay, you know, we're good. Like we can
comfortable.
Yeah, kind of chill a little bit and not feel that there was like suspicion underneath everything. It's hard for me to really articulate it, but I think that's what I had hoped to see.
And Bridget, did you ever feel like the curfew or like, how did you feel about that?
I was pretty okay with it for the most part. But once the show started getting popular and we started getting invited to things or clubs were opening their arms just to us, the girls without Hef, there was a part of me that really wanted to experience some of that stuff. And I was lucky enough to where at some point he finally was able to say, okay, you and Kendra can go with like the playmates that are here, but you have to have security with you. So it was definitely still under very high security, but we were finally allowed to like break through the curfew and go out. But this is years later. And I also knew that I wasn't going to be there forever. I wanted to be a part of the life forever and friends and still come up, but I knew that I wasn't going to be living there forever.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. How do you guys balance? On the one hand, people are saying, or people say that it was all my dad, the girls next door is all my dad. And I think you said it really well, Holly, in your book, where it's like, well, you guys proved that it was actually you guys were essential to it. And at the same time, my father put you guys in a position where financially, like you guys are killing it. You have this career that is possible because you guys were up at the mansion. How do you balance those two truths?
Well, I'm a big proponent of like two things can be true at the same time. And I wish more people just in general understood that. Like Girls Next Door was an amazing opportunity. And I mean, I think when I complain about things, it's almost more I'm complaining about people's lack of understanding about things or thinking that I can't talk about my situation as it was because I did benefit from it in some way. Because my other option is completely lying because I am going to be asked about it for the rest of my life. So my other option is to lie and talk about that a relationship that I don't feel like was healthy or that I wouldn't recommend to anyone else was like so great. So it is a weird thing to balance. And I don't think it is something that ever completely resolves itself and is one thing.
What you just said, I don't understand why people would get upset about that.
Yeah,
they do.
And I'm not sure why. I mean, I have different theories, but I don't know.
And as far as I'm concerned, like yes, we wouldn't have been on the show if we weren't living with Hef. But I feel like the bulk of the show was about us and we made that show popular. And we did put 7 years of our life into that relationship. And we put 4 years or however long it was into that show. And we worked hard for all of that. So it's equally ours, too. You can say we wouldn't have had it without Hef. but we helped build it and we helped create it. And it wouldn't have been what it was if it wasn't for us. So when people say, oh, you guys are still making money off of all of that, or you're still, you know, living your life through all of that, I worked hard for that for 7 years. I put 7 years of my life into that. Why shouldn't I be allowed to talk about it? Why shouldn't I be allowed to make money off of it? Why shouldn't Holly and I still be able to do a podcast and talk about it?
Yes, you guys are the cultural icons. Not my dad is a cultural icon, but you guys are too. You know, that was a huge part of that time period, that show. I totally agree.
Yeah. How old were you when your parents split?
Third grade.
So that would be
second grade. I was like 9 or 10.
And then you and your mom and your brother moved into a house next door. For those who don't know, it was a house that was originally on the same parcel of property as the mansion. So it kind of matched. It was the same style. Did you have a house you preferred? Like, or was it apples and oranges? Like, oh my God, the mansion's so fun, but like my house is more my sanctuary. How did that feel?
You know, it felt like, when is dad and mom going to get back together? You know, because that was what the narrative was like, this is temporary. Yeah. And so I didn't like temporary. I wanted to go back home. Mm-hmm. And then once it became understood that my dad moving on, I think my mom's home became my home, and my dad's home became like a fun place to be. And so all of the imagination games and all of the, like, yeah. So my mom's home became my home. And I think, yeah, I don't want to stir shit, but it was very hurtful, that transition, especially when we had bedroom three, and bedroom three, I think, became Bridget's room.
Eventually. Yeah.
She wasn't the one who asked for it, though. It was another person was like, I want this room all to myself. And that was kind of awkward, I felt.
I don't blame anybody. I just think the fact that, like, they were okay with removing our room from, like, our home, like, that mm-hmm. was our home, that was really hurtful. So that transition messed with me. But quickly after, my mom's home became my real home, is what I call.
And you were free to come in back and forth at any time, because there was a gate that connected the property. Were there ever any rules like, oh, you can't go at this time or during this party? And did you ever sneak into a party as a kid? Because I totally would have.
Oh, of course. Of course I snuck in.
Get ready for July 4th with early savings at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances, and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Did you ever see anything you weren't supposed to see, or like stumble into a room and be like, ugh?
Yeah, I can't because one person I really love, and he was in a bad place. But another one, we were in the pool. I think we could have been swimming in the pool. It was fine. But we go through the waterfall, and there's some guy getting the biggest of BJs. And we're like, oh my God. And we swam back out and we left.
Wait, that didn't happen to be on Easter one year, did it? Like after the festivities were over?
Somebody was fucking in there on Easter?
Yes, but it was later in the day, and I was sitting outside. My parents were there, and I was sitting outside like by the pool bar, just like hanging out with my parents. And all of a sudden, I swear, a kid came screaming out from underneath the waterfall going, like, you know, little kids would, freaking out about something going on in there. And then I won't name the guest, but he came out and he's like pulling his pants on, and this other girl came out, and then they went into the bathhouse. I was like, uh-oh.
My God.
That sounds awful, like an awful lot like what I experienced. Maybe.
That's so funny. Which party did you sneak into, or were there lots of them?
Yeah, there were lots of them. I've told the story before, but you guys, the fans, haven't heard it. But so the door was locked. Between my mom's house and my dad's house. And we would just hop over it. It was pretty easy just to hop over the gate. And then we'd, uh, we we couldn't be seen at the party because the security guards knew we weren't supposed to be there. So we would like patrol the woods and the tennis courts and just spy on the guests and see what was going on. And, you know, we couldn't be noticed. So we did our best to be stealthy. Like we imagined ourselves as, you know, psyops or CIA agents or something.
Why does that sound so fun? Like
it was fun.
I want to do that.
We even like doing it, like after we would go upstairs, we would like peek over the balcony at people and like throw stuff or like yell their name. And there was something so fun about that. Like more fun than the party.
I totally agree. It was more fun.
Yeah.
There was a good one where there, do you remember the Hugh Hefner cutout?
Yeah, the cardboard cutout.
Cardboard cutout. And my brother would, he'd be in the window and he'd like hold
Hefner, my God, that's fucking
out the window.
That's amazing.
People would be like, hey, Hef.
Okay, so your parents have split and you guys are next door. Then the first real girlfriends that I know of that your dad had was Brandy, Sandy, and Mandy. When this happened, do you remember having thoughts on this?
Holy shit. Yeah. there was like a, you know, all my love to Brandy, Sandy, and Mandy, but it's just a good story. Like people would say like, oh, Brandy, Candy, Sandy, Mandy, Landy, Bandy. Oh, yeah. You know, it was just like he had, I mean, that's just a funny, the funny four names all together. Brandy, Sandy, Candy, and Sandy. There were four of them, right? Brandy, Sandy, Mandy. And was there a Candy? I don't think there was a Candy.
No, I think there was a Jessica.
It was three. Yeah. So people considered them dumb blondes. I don't think that's fair, but that was just the narrative that I was told back then.
Yeah.
What did you think when all of a sudden it was like seven girlfriends?
It just sucked because that was my dad. And like 2 years or 3 years before that, he was not full-time dad, but he was present. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you guys know he called it what his like Picasso had different eras and he went into his blonde era. And it's like, well, his blonde era wasn't like his family era.
Yeah.
So his, you know, so it's like you have seven girlfriends. That's a lot of things to do that is not related to your kids.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was wondering too, seeing all these like women with a very similar look go in and out like a revolving door. Did that shape your taste in women? Like, did you look at that and you're like, I'm not really into like the platinum blonde bimbo look.
Yeah. Yeah. Just that.
Yeah.
And I just want to say, reiterate again, it's like, I'm in a beautiful home. He's given me a beautiful life. Like, thank you, Dad. You know,
yeah.
It's but it's complicated. People aren't perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever get to know any of the girlfriends? Were there any that you were like, oh, I really like this one. I hope he keeps her. Or that one sucks. I can't wait till she's gone. Or any of those kind of feelings?
Totally. Kendra. I loved Kendra so much. Because we were smoking weed, getting into trouble. And she's like, I've been there. And so she was fun. We weren't in the, like you guys were on Survivor Island or something. You guys were in the thick of it. As an outsider, everybody was pretty, we were just enjoying their company.
Yeah.
But they were all, I loved all those Latinos, really sweet.
So from a very early age, it kind of seemed like there was an expectation on you to follow in your dad's footsteps. And you said before that you did want to be CEO of Playboy. So did that feel pretty natural or did it ever feel like a lot of pressure?
Like I had to succeed in school. And if I didn't succeed in school, then I wouldn't be the CEO of Playboy. And I wasn't succeeding in school. I was undiagnosed with ADD. Mm-hmm. So it felt like, you know, I was like a failure in some ways and that I wasn't doing it right. It never felt like, even though like I was a kid, so I didn't know what I really wanted, but I never really wanted to be the CEO of Playboy. Like it just wasn't. I think it was something that was, I was kind of told that I wanted to be. And also I really looked up to my dad at the time, but like it did feel like when I wanted to be a daredevil or I wanted to be a stuntman, it excites me. Oh,
yeah.
I get to do stunts. Like that's cool. When I said I wanted to be the CEO of Playboy, it was more like, I'm going to be the CEO of Playboy in a kind of snobby, like show off-y way. So just wasn't, it didn't turn out to be the person that I wanted to be, really.
Yeah. And did you ever feel, because sometimes I would notice there would be comments made, like one year there was a Playmate of the Year ceremony, and in her speech, she was making a joke and she said, okay, Marston and Cooper, maybe when you're 18, when you were like 12 or something. Or there's pictures of like you on a red carpet and those Playboy bunnies like kissing both your cheeks. Like, did that just feel like funny and awesome? Or did it ever feel like yucky at any point or like too much?
This is such a good question. And I think I noticed this. But the like a difference between women and men is like if those were girls, it would be totally creepy and they wouldn't be cool with it. As boys, it was like fucking awesome. Like,
yeah,
I dreamed of being with a playmate, you know, from as young as I can remember. So it was always really cool. Yeah.
I kind of want to go back to the seven girlfriends because you said it was like Survivor for us. So you guys were aware of the drama then?
No, we weren't. But now we are. Oh, but okay. Like what I'm saying is like we were kind of outsiders just like enjoying like Disneyland and enjoying the things that we got to do all of us together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That reminds me, like we did do some group activities too, where we all went to Disneyland at one point and we went and saw Christmas lights and things like that. Was that fun for you guys?
Some of my best memories, those Christmas lights, I forgot until you mentioned it. And we drove in the limo and we got, God, that's such a special memory for me.
Yeah, we did the hot chocolate and yeah, it was so fun.
And the gingerbread cookies, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Oh, that makes me emotional. Yeah, I loved those memories so much. Yeah.
Because they're fond memories for me too.
Yeah, same.
We didn't really get a chance to bond with you guys too much. And the times that you did come over for family night, we tried to like stay out of the way and let that be family night for you guys. So when we did get to do these special events, I thought I think of them very fondly and I wish that we were able to do more of those things.
Me too, because it felt like a family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know?
It really did. A couple of the girls had kids around your same age. Did you bond with them? And what was that kind of like?
I didn't know them that well. I remember Tina Jordan, was it? Mm-hmm. Tina Jordan's daughter was really sweet. She was just a nice little girl. I didn't know anybody else, really. Oh, that's not true. No, Renee. Oh, Lou. Oh, my God. Yeah, Lewis.
Caitlin.
Child. Caitlin. I had a huge crush on Caitlin.
Uh-huh.
That was a Hollywood romance. a tragedy in the end. I just never got the girl. And Lewis was like my best friend. Yeah. We played a lot of video games together.
So a non-serious topic. We love to talk about food on this podcast. Did you have a chef over at your mom's house as well?
No.
No. And did you have favorite things you ordered when you came over to the mansion?
Yes. Chili cheese fries.
Ooh. Yum.
Dodger dogs.
Yeah. We had Dodger dogs at the house.
Yeah.
That's insanity. How did I not know that?
I didn't know either.
God. For those of you who don't know, the LA Dodgers, they're famous for serving like a long hot dog. It's called a Dodger dog.
Did you guys have a favorite?
More than I can now. I mean, everything from like the HMH chocolate cake to even like really like boring sounding healthy stuff. It was really easy to eat healthy at the mansion because the chefs would just do such an amazing job. Like you could have a certain salad you wanted and it would be the best thing you ever ate, or like a salmon dish. Like who the fuck wants salmon? But it would be amazing when it came from the mansion chefs.
They did such a good Caesar salad. And then we had them do a replica of the Olive Garden salad. And we loved that. I had this bean dip and they'd make homemade tortilla chips and they put like cheese over the top and it was so delicious.
Yeah. Are you talking about the one with like the special chips too?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. That was a fucking good dish.
Yeah. And then I had chicken tacos that Ramon made so good.
I need some of that chip and dip right now.
I wish.
So... you guys, so this interview actually went on for at least an hour and a half. So we're going to come back next week with a part two. But I wanted to take a few minutes now for you and I to kind of recap and give thoughts on what we talked about in this interview, because I feel like I have so much to say and so much I thought of after we hung up the phone or the Zoom or however.
I know. It was hard. It was hard to take it all in because, like I said at the beginning, like we're just kind of getting to know him again, but really getting to know him as an adult and as a real person this time, not as just like some little kid that was hanging out at the mansion. And I just felt like I, for some reason, I feel like it was something we all needed and I didn't know we needed it.
Absolutely. I felt that way too. And one thing I remembered afterwards that I wish I would have thought of when we were having this conversation is there was that moment where Marston asked me about how I had always hoped when I was at the mansion to see like a deeper side of Hef that I never really got to see. And I wish I would have remembered this in the interview, but I remember thinking, and this was a conclusion I realized even after I wrote my book, like years after, that I feel like Hef was only ever truly himself in front of Mary. Like I would see these little glimpses when it was like him and Mary in the office where he really felt like a quote unquote normal person and had his guard down and wasn't in the role of Hef. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I feel like with almost everyone else in his life, even his brother Keith, there was a little bit of formality. And he was still very much in the role of Hef. Like, obviously, when he was interacting with his brother, I could tell that there was a lot of deep feelings and obviously shared memories from their childhood. And they had a kind of shorthand they could speak in. But I still felt like he was very much in the mode of being, quote unquote, Hef, the character. You know what I mean? And there was that distance a little bit.
Well, and because we only saw Keith and Hef together, like, at buffet dinners or for manly night or Keith would come over to play tennis or whatever. We never saw them like just shooting the shit really on their own.
But I don't know if they ever were on their own.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, lives. I don't even know if that ever existed. And even if they did have like a short meeting with themselves, it was something very, in order to do that, it would be something very serious that they were having a meeting about.
Yeah. And even when we would travel sometimes with Hef's brother, you know, they were the only two of their generation on that trip, other than maybe if Mary came along with us. And sometimes they would be like on one section of the plane playing backgammon, but it still never felt like guard was let down, really. Yeah.
What about the times like we were, like, say, in the bedroom, and I don't mean in a sexual way, but like just hanging out and in pajamas and like watching a movie or ordering food or something. Like, I feel like sometimes he was just silly and giddy and like relaxed. And
yeah, I feel like that was the closest thing to what I ever saw on like a one-on-one basis was just like watching a movie in bed at night. But there's still that feeling because the power imbalance was so big. Yeah. And I think when I said like I was always hoping to see another side of him, I was always hoping that there would be one day, a day when he would trust me and that power imbalance would kind of melt a little bit.
Yeah.
And that just never happened.
Right.
So it's interesting. It's an interesting dynamic.
It is interesting. And I also thought something interesting that Marston said, and we agreed with him at the time, but after this, I've been thinking about it more. He was saying, you guys will know this, that you can't just ask Hef to go to the movies or go out to dinner. And he'll just be like, what are you talking about? Like, I don't do that. But I feel like he, even though I think he had different reasons for doing it, that he did do that with us is something he didn't do with other people, though, or even his own kids.
Yeah, and I wonder if part of that was also the image. Like, he feels okay going out surrounded with a bunch of women.
I think, I 100% think so. But I wasn't thinking it at the time. Yeah. I was just thinking, well, there was something in it for him when we did it because there was the opportunity of press or a picture or being seen out. And I do believe that's true, too, which is one of the reasons he did it. But I also think it's that it was his image. And if he's surrounded by, you know, seven women or whatever, and he's at the movies, that's still cool because, holy shit, Hef's here with all his girls. But if he were just there with his son, that doesn't look so cool, maybe, to in his mind.
Yeah, or like he's surrounded by his image still. Like he's still, quote unquote, Hef the character if he's surrounded by all these blondes. Whereas if he's going out for like a one-on-one movie with one of his kids, that's an opportunity to be a little more vulnerable. And I don't think he was comfortable being vulnerable.
I don't think so either. Yeah. And it's not even just his kids. Like, I don't think he would ever have like gone out to dinner or gone to the movies with just Keith or one of his good friends or even Mary or anything
even
like
Mary,
that.
Who I feel like he was himself around.
Yeah, I don't think he would ever do that.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the reasons, too, he was also a homebody is his home was set up so that he was the center of the universe and he could always feel, like, secure in that place and not have to be vulnerable.
Mm-hmm. And I think that was very important to him. And we talk about that in the interview, like, why did he have to have so much control? And why did he have to be, you know, lamb chops at, you know, at a restaurant or like curfews and all that kind of stuff? But I think it all boils down to that, like keeping control.
Yeah, for sure. Also, I wanted to make note that I couldn't find any photos of us with Marston in my scrapbooks.
Oh, okay. So I went home too and I was looking for that kind of stuff and there's very few.
Yeah, I think he must have been more camera shy than I realized because there would even be like I'd find the photos of us from when we were doing like Christmas cookie nights and you would see the other kids that were there. You would see a lot of photos of Cooper, but not Marston, but I knew he was there. Or I could only find like one picture of us like from Disneyland or like a Christmas group photo.
Yeah. I also had another thought on that, though. I also think that maybe we weren't given the photos that the kids were in, or very few.
That could be because I know that they would make copies of all those photos and they would give us the ones that like we were in.
Yeah.
And not like other pictures.
Yeah. But I mean, I feel like even in Disneyland, like there's only like one group picture and then they're not in the rest of all of our Disneyland photos. And I'm like, that's so weird. Why wouldn't they be in these photos? But I think that maybe they did kid photos and then they did our photos and then kind of kept them separate. Like there's no reason for these girlfriends to have pictures of the kids kind of thing.
Yeah, that makes sense. Also, one thing that was interesting for me to hear was how hurtful it felt to have room three taken away. Because I was there when that happened. And I remember feeling like, first of all, room three was the first place I ever spent a night at the mansion because it had those extra beds. So if anybody was new, that's where they would stay. And I remember feeling like it was weird because that was kind of known as the boys' room and there were still toys in there. I never saw them in there while any other girls were there. So it's not like anything inappropriate was happening, but it still felt odd to me. Like, I don't know if this is a space that should be overlapping. And then almost immediately, one of the other girlfriends moved out of room five. I asked if I could have that room. So I got that room. And then the other person who had been staying in room three asked to have it all to herself. And I remember at the time thinking, you know, just me being judgy over in a corner, thinking that was kind of a ballsy ask. And I was surprised that she was given that room. And then later on, during one of our nights out or something, I remember her going up to Hef and whining and being like, Marston and Cooper are being rude to me because I have their room now. And I remember thinking, shut the fuck up. Like, who does that? Like, who, like, tries to, like, bring... Like, she was whining to him like she wanted Hef to, like, do something about it. And I just remember thinking that was so gross and feeling like, well, I don't blame them. And just the whole thing just felt kind of wrong. But then as the years went by, I would see Marston and Cooper from a distance and think, well, they seem really happy and well-adjusted. Maybe I was just overreacting or being too judgy, but maybe not.
Right. I, you know, when I was at the mansion, I thought I had heard that it had been their bedroom before. And there were some signs of it still. Like there were some towels that were like cartoon themed.
Yeah.
Like there's some things in there that made it true that it was their room, but nothing like overly, like there wasn't toys or anything like that still in there. But it had occurred to me that that might be tough for them, that they might be like, wait, that's my room. Cause I feel like I would definitely feel that way. And I would be devastated if somebody took over my room as a kid.
I would feel that way. And I'm impressed by how mature Marston and Cooper were, because if I were in their shoes, I would feel that way. But I would also like hate all the girlfriends.
Me too.
Maybe I'm just petty like that, but
me too. And I love when he brought it up and you like immediately jumped to my defense. You're like, oh, but she didn't do that. That was somebody else. And he's like, no, I'm not blaming. But I just thought it was funny because well, he's like, wait, that wasn't her. Yeah. She didn't steal your room.
Yeah, for sure.
It was already stolen.
Yeah. My other thought from that interview is I feel like I can really relate to Marston feeling like he was disliked by the staff, because Marston was always very like quiet and kind of came off serious. And I'm like that too. And I feel like when you're like that, a lot of times people jump to the conclusion that you're an asshole or you're mean, especially if you're surrounded by people who are more outgoing and charismatic. And I could relate to that. And especially him saying, you know, I was always polite. I was always taught to say please and thank you. Cause I feel like that too. Like I was in customer service working at restaurants and retail for, I had a ton of those jobs and worked like that for years before I moved into the mansion. So I would have never been rude to a butler, but then things would happen like that bartender writing a manuscript that I talked about in the interview where he's talking about me and he's not saying I'm a bitch because of any interaction he had with me. He was just like observing me from a distance and like writing all this shit. And I wasn't the only one he talked shit about. Like he also talked shit about like Kimberly and said he didn't like her. And it was just super judgy. But I can relate to Marston's feelings of like not being liked by people for no reason.
Honestly, that was an absolute shock to me. That was too. Like a revelation that I had no clue about.
Yeah, because I thought for sure when I asked that question, he was going to be like, oh, they're just like family. And to be fair, he did say there are a lot of people he's really close with and a lot of people who were great to him. And when he was a small child, they were really great to him. But I was shocked to hear that they were rude.
And this was later when he's talking about this. This was after we left.
Sounds like more like teenage years when he, I think, did live in room 3 for a while, like after we were gone and the Shannon twins were gone.
Mm-hmm.
So crazy.
It makes me wonder, like, what else was going on at the mansion at that time, too, that made people change their mind? Or is it just all him? I don't think so. I think there was other things going on.
Yeah, or if it was a big staff turnover. And there were also a couple things he said where he said, oh, so-and-so told me this. And it was something that made him feel bad. Or so-and-so told me that Mary was talking shit about me.
Yeah.
But the so-and-so person is somebody who I have experience with, and she's not the most reliable narrator. So I was thinking about this interview, and I'm like, I would hate it if he felt bad about things because someone was giving him a wrong impression.
I wanted to say that to him too, but I'm like, I'm not going to jump in on this because I don't know. Like, I don't know. You know?
Yeah, I mean, to be clear, like, I wasn't there. I don't know what was said. I don't know if the butlers were doing shots after he left. But at the same time, I'm like, well, I would hate it if he felt bad if that wasn't the entire truth, you know?
Right.
So, but I'm really excited for next week because the conversation keeps going and it's just as interesting. And we hope you guys love it.
Yeah.
If you guys would like more content, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/girlsnextlevel. And we will see you next week.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Lowe's knows how to help you save. This July 4th, get up to 40% off select Whirlpool kitchen appliances. Plus, get an additional 10% off when you buy 2 or 3 select major appliances. And when you buy 4 or more, you'll save an additional 20%. Find the right appliances and features that fit your kitchen's unique needs and style. Shop Whirlpool 4th of July deals at Lowe's. Valid through 7/9. See Lowe's.com for details. Savings vary based on purchase amount. Selection varies by location.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience with a simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelance profiles, get help drafting a job post, or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them to take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com today and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com. Upwork.com.